Karen Lyle from SailSport Talk with a report on SailSport and maritime on the Atlantic coast and the Pacific coast of North America. On the Atlantic coast, the Ida Lewis Distance Race has winners in five classes. Boats Prospector, Cepheus, Tiger, Breakaway, and Erie 2 took class trophies. This overnight sprint of 110 miles set out after noontime from Fort Adams to a mark southwest of Block Island and then ended up back at the Newport Harbor. People were lined up at the deck of the host Ida Lewis Yacht Club, and teams were greeted on the water with a bottle of Prosecco. The breezes were very light, which is why the race committee chose the shortest of the courses they had planned for. Brian Kunha, whom we interviewed here on SailSport Talk recently, won the PHRF Spinnaker Coronet class. He has sailed to victory in this race several times before, including last year. The wind was east-southeast this race, but in years past it has been south-southwest. That meant that his boat, Erie 2, was flying her spinnaker, which is a sail perfect for the 7 to 12 knots of breeze at the time when he was coming back to Newport. The smaller boats experienced a more difficult time around the mark because of the current being against them and the light wind. On the Pacific coast, we have been following the journey of the Lady Washington from Pier 39 to Aberdeen. But today, we have news of the Hawaiian Chieftain, the companion tall ship that often does cannon battles with the Lady Washington. The Hawaiian Chieftain, a beloved tall ship belonging to Grays Harbor Historical Seaport, has been faithfully serving the public for the last 30 years, providing education and workforce development to generations of mariners. Grays Harbor wants to thank all of you that have been part of that journey so far, and those that have continued to care for her as crew, students, and volunteers. All of you bring life to these two tall ships and the entire Grays Harbor Historical Seaport organization. This past June, Grays Harbor hauled out the Hawaiian Chieftain for her biannual maintenance in Port Townsend, Washington, where a team of professional crew and contractors combined forces to evaluate the Hawaiian Chieftain's maintenance needs and craft a plan that will keep her sailing for another 30 years. The Hawaiian Chieftain will be out of the water for a minimum of 3 months while she receives necessary work. This work is an exciting and necessary project that requires shipwrights, electricians, and welders to all be working together. The Lady Washington will still be sailing and continuing her schedule while the Chieftain is out of the water. Would you like to help the tall ships? If you would like to contribute to the new sales campaign or attend one of the two galas coming up this fall, one of them in San Francisco, you can find out more at historicalseaport.org. This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk.
All right, thanks very much, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network, 500 outlets, 177 countries, 9:40 on a Tuesday morning. You know it's time to talk a little SailSport Talk with our friend Karen Lyle. Karen, how are you? Good to see you again.
I'm doing fantastic today, Rick.
Good stuff. And in studio, it is our honor to welcome Wendy Tuck from Australia. She is the first female skipper to win a around-the-world yacht race. And she also is now the skipper of Maiden, of which we had the skipper Tracy Edwards. This was, of course, from back in the 80s when an all-female crew took this boat and won a championship with it. What is it? First of all, welcome, I want to say to you, Wendy. From where in Australia do you hail?
Oh, thank you for the welcome. I'm from Sydney in Australia.
Okay, and how did you get involved in, I mean, obviously Sydney Harbor's right in front of you there, Botany Bay. I mean, it's just you can't help but sail, right?
Yeah, that's true, but as a kid I didn't sail, I used to surf as a kid, so I actually came to sailing in my late 20s, which is a little bit of an unusual story, so didn't start as a child, unfortunately, but always had that affinity with the ocean.
Why are the Australians such a sporty lot? Because you look at them, they're like 1% of the world's population, but they win like 20% of the Olympic medals. Why is that country so sporty?
I guess our parents don't like us that much, so they send us outside to play all the time. So, you know, as I grew up as a kid, you came in when it got dark and you were outside playing sports, so I guess that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wendy, on this round-the-world race that you won recently, it was 2017, is that correct?
2017-18 it finished, yep.
That was an 11-month trip, and you had how many crew? How did that work with going around the world and changing crew and all? Tell us a little bit about that
Yeah, so it's a race called the Clipper Race where it has one professional skipper on board, then people pay to actually be on board. So I had a full-time crew, probably up to about 50 people, with a maximum of about 20 people on the boat each time. So I'd have 10 people who sailed all the way around the world, and people would get on and off for different legs because the race entails about 8 legs around the world.
So are you also the helmsman as well?
Some of the time. So everybody that gets on board does everything on board, which is quite nice. You know, you get people who've never sailed before, that then they're steering a 70-foot boat down, you know, 10-meter waves and stuff. So it's pretty exciting for everyone on board. We do everything.
I would imagine that you have to run a pretty tight ship when you have such a large crew like that. I mean, how do you keep your eyes on everything?
Yeah, how I run the boat, would select two different watch leaders who would always be on watch, one of them at a time, and I'm floating and, yeah, pretty much checking the weather, making sure the boat's neat and tidy and well-maintained. We do checks every day on the boat, so if we had problems starting, we can fix them before they became a big problem. So, yeah, absolutely a tight ship was run.
Did you have any experience that you'd like to share with us on that particular round the world? Because you had 11 months. I'm sure there were where it was a little bit perilous or, you know, the crew really had to work together to pull you through.
Yeah, this race, it wasn't too bad. This was the second one I'd done. The first race I'd done, we had a knockdown in the North Pacific. So sailing from Asia over to Seattle, we had a huge knockdown where I got thrown out my bunk, broke my rib, got knocked unconscious, had a gash in my head that needed stitches. And the way the crew pulled together then, because we had to make sure the boat was safe, I was okay. Someone nearly drowned because they got pinned under something that collapsed when the wave were on its side. You know, when the boat was on its side, a wave went over this person who couldn't move. So just human nature is extraordinary. The way these people who weren't experienced ocean races, some were by that stage, just pulled together, it was just incredible.
Have you ever gotten to the point where you're like, if we ever get to a port, I'm never getting on a boat again?
I think every sailor at some stage in their life thinks that, but the minute you have that first glass of wine, you forget all about that.
So now you are on the Maiden. And with a nonprofit organization, the Maiden Factor, that's bringing awareness for women. Can you tell us a little bit about this world tour? Because we have a world audience here to 168 countries to 177. and so tell us a little bit about how that is working for people who might be experiencing the boat in the different ports.
Yeah, the Maiden, we're on a 2-year voyage. So as Rick mentioned earlier, she sailed around the world 30 years ago with first all-female crew. Tracy Edwards, who was the skipper then, got told about the boat, was going to be sunk in the Seychelles, and she thought, I can't let this iconic vessel that did so much 30 years ago just go to waste. So she crowdfunded, got money raised for the boat, brought it back to the UK, got it refurbished, and then decided, what am I going to do now? So in the last 30 years, Tracy's been working for girls' education all around the world. So there's 130 million girls that don't have access to education, which we think is not fair. So Tracy's now used the yacht Maiden to sail around the world to bring that message to people. So we have 6 charities on board that we're supporting, and our next stops on our world tour, we go down to LA, then we're down to Chile, Valparaiso, then round Cape Horn, which will be pretty exciting, and we go to Punta del Este in Uruguay, and then the yacht will carry on sailing. So right now we're raising money for charities, which is fantastic.
Wendy Tuck is with us, skipper of Maiden. When you say going around the Cape, pretty exciting. I mean, I think about, you know, the Bounty and Captain Bligh, and they want to turn back, and it's, you know, 50 degrees below zero, and for you it's like, yeah, it should be pretty fun. Why is it so, I don't want to say easy for you, but why is it more manageable?
You just take step by step, you know. We'll get down there. It will be in the right season, very early in the season, but it will be the right season. So you never know what you're going to get. But it's not like you're sailing along one day and you've got 10 knots, then you've got 60 or 70 knots it builds, and so you're aware of it. You never conquer an ocean. I'll never, ever say that. And it won't be easy. It'll be hard. But it's just that challenge when you come through something that's quite tough that you've done it. You go, yeah, we can do this. It's that satisfying at the end that you can make, you know, get through stuff when you pull together and work hard.
Mm-hmm. Have you sailed around Cape Horn before?
No, unfortunately, I haven't. When I did the 2 round the world races, we don't go around Cape Horn. We go through Panama Canal. So I'm really looking forward to it. So
this would be something on your bucket list. You go check.
Yeah, right? This is, yeah, absolutely there on the bucket list. So it'll be a big tick when we get round.
What about, you know, you going through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, and these are areas of the world that are quite fascinating, but sometimes they can be fractious to Westerners as well. Is there ever any bit of concern there?
I wasn't the skipper on board there. I joined in Sri Lanka, but having spoken to the crew and Nikki Henderson, who was the previous skipper, it was quite interesting, to say the least, especially being an all-female crew, because we do run with an all-female crew, mm-hmm. but going through the Red Sea, they did have to get men on board, security guards. So wow. We run the boat safely. So we had security guards on board going through there, and they had their drills what to do if they were approached by pirates.
Wow.
So what is your relationship with Nikki? Because you were in the Round the World Clipper race, and Nikki was second place. So did you, like, vie for that first place along the way, and then now you're on the maiden crew together, right? Or, no, you're not together. She was a skipper before you, and now you're taking over from her. Is that correct?
Yeah, Nikki and I are good friends. I have nothing but respect for her. You've got to remember, when Nikki came second in the race, I only beat her by 4 points, which is hardly anything. She was 25 at the time. That's just extraordinary. You know, at 25, she's sailing around the world looking after 50 people. At 25, I couldn't even look after myself. So she's an incredible woman and sports person. So Nikki and I are friends. I talked to her 2 days ago. We did a big handover of the yacht, so we are in contact, and hopefully she'll keep going forward and doing awesome stuff.
When you say you're racing for 11 months, I mean, what does that entail? How much are you on land? How much do you get a break and all that?
The first long leg we did was from Liverpool in the UK down to Punta del Este in Uruguay. That was just over 30 days at sea.
Wow.
You want to race fast because then you get into port earlier, so you have a longer stopover. Our stopovers in port were generally anywhere between 5 and 10 days, but our stopovers entail things like corporate sails. We've got to do all the repairs on the boat. You know, a long sail like that, you're going to have some damage. So your time in port isn't like sitting back drinking cocktails all the time. It's hard work still. So it's like 11 months of no sleep pretty much.
Wow.
You know, you were the instructor, or are you, prior to this, at the Clipper Race Training Base in Sydney, and you're a woman sailor and have experienced not a lot of women sailors in the roles. You were the first one who won this Around the World race. What would you say were some of the challenges that you had as a woman, you know, kind of breaking through barriers and so forth? If you have any stories that you dare to tell?
Yeah, I'd been working in the marine industry for quite a long time, teaching and skippering and driving powerboats as well on Sydney Harbour and up and down the east coast of Australia. I think for me, the story's a bit unusual because I surfed as a kid, and when I surfed, I'd be the only girl out in the water. So I've been used to participating in sports where I'm the only girl, so it was never a big deal for me. And I think because I was always such a tomboy, I never thought there was a difference between me and a guy. It was just they're doing the same things that I like doing. I think my first ocean race, it was quite tough. I was the only girl on the boat. Excuse me, the only girl on the boat. And you get on to do a job and boys would push you out the way. You're like, I can do this with my eyes closed, but okay, I'll just sit back. And I got some advice from a boyfriend of mine. He said, look, just be yourself. Just keep working hard as you do. These guys will get there and burn themselves out in the first 24 hours, but you're just going to keep on that same level and work hard the whole time. So when they're all falling about going, they're so tired and can't do anything, you'll just be there working hard. So, and that's pretty much what I did. So, you know, just stay at that same level, and consistency will win the day every time.
You know, one of the things that with this show, we've had a lot of people come in saying that they're trying to make sailing more accessible to everyone. And I just think about it. Here, I grew up in San Francisco Bay, you know, middle class, but I always thought sailing was inaccessible to me. I thought you had to be super rich to do it. So how do you get that message out that you don't have to be this elitist to be a sailor?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's such a misconception. Like, I grew up in a working class place in Sydney, 2 hours away from the sea, and I surfed and then eventually made a living out of the ocean. I think it's not elitist. You just walk down the dock and you'll start crewing for someone. You know, people have to own boats, but they need to be crewed. So there's always crew positions. So it's just make yourself available. Again, I got offered the advice, a Wednesday race, which are usually called beer can races. If you walk down the dock with a case of beer on your shoulder, someone's going to take you for a sail. And that's how you start. That's how you get on.
Wow.
Get on and start proving yourself.
They love you for your beer, not your skills.
That's to start off with, yeah. Then you prove otherwise.
Okay.
In your trip down the coast, tell us a little bit about the weather and the ride.
Yeah, we've just sailed now from Vancouver down here. It took us 5 days, 4 nights. It was such a mixed bag. Coming out of Juan de Fuca Strait, we had wind on the nose of 35 knots, which was quite exciting against tide, so a really short, sharp sea, which was pretty unpleasant. Then we got out in the ocean. We got some really nice breeze, you know, a day or two with the spinnaker up, which was beautiful sailing. But then, unfortunately, we had to do a lot of motoring because fog came in, no wind, really cold. So it went from beautiful, hot, sunny to cold and foggy, which I believe is quite regular around here. But the wildlife we saw was amazing. Coming into San Fran yesterday, we were actually on whale watches. There were so many whales in, you know, where we were. You don't want to hit a whale because I don't know who would come up better. So it was just incredible. The wildlife was amazing. It was a beautiful sail.
And last question for you, being on the maiden, seeing the documentary and everything else, what does it mean to you to be on this iconic vessel?
Oh, to be on this vessel is such a privilege for me. You know, it's, as you said, it's so iconic, and it broke down so many barriers for women and girls in sailing. And what we're trying to do now is still doing that. We take people on that haven't got much experience offshore to give them offshore experience, and to see them getting off, you know, competent steerers and sailing across oceans is amazing. So I feel incredibly privileged.
Best of luck going around the Cape. Thank you so much for coming in, Wendy Tuck. And Karen, we'll see you next week.
We will, 9:37.
All right,
good Tuesdays.
Stuff. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline USA.